This week on Family Anatomy, Anatomy of the Midlife Crisis.
The hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologists. So if you want to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you can get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Hello and welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information, with your hosts, Dr. Giuseppe Spazzano
and Dr. Brian McDonald. You can find us at familyanatomy.com or check us out on iTunes, and we are going to get right into it. We're talking about the midlife crisis today.
The midlife crisis, something I would know nothing about. I'm not in my 40s myself. You, on the other hand.
It's true. It's true.
2 weeks away.
How do you feel about the end of life crisis that you're experiencing? It's been a long time since you were in your 40s.
Well, yeah. No, Dr. Brian is turning 40 in a couple of weeks.
I turned 40
8 years ago.
Oh, my God.
So I have a little bit of an idea what you're going to go through.
Really? A crisis, yeah. I assume.
Big crisis. Oh,
it's
my.
It's huge.
Yes.
Of course, because as we're recording this, my birthday is coming up. We're talking about topics, and Giuseppe and I are chatting about what should we, you know, what are the things that might be important for us to discuss on the show. And we haven't talked about midlife crisis because I'm, you know, hadn't entered it yet, but, and you were long past yours. So I thought it's coming up, so I better get ready. Let's do the research and find out what's going on there.
Yeah, we were talking about what topics to have for the show, and I could feel Dr. Brian's anxiety through that whole conversation. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It is going to happen. But you know what? There's not a lot of anxiety for me about it yet. I don't know if it's going to happen as it gets closer to those 2 weeks. But this midlife crisis idea is, it's ubiquitous enough that I can remember a couple of years ago, my older son, who would have been 7 at the time, maybe he was 6 even, said to me, "Dad, why do men buy fast cars when they're getting older?" So he was obviously seeing this on TV, or he was getting that from somewhere. It didn't just come out of his brain. He didn't just make that up.
Wow. Yeah. When I think back, though, it's interesting.
It's a hazy memory for you, I know.
Yes, when I think back, not 8 years ago, but when I was a kid and my father was in his 40s.
Right.
Right? And I remember this one thing stuck with me. You know, he said that I was playing guitar. I was learning guitar at the time. And he could play a couple of chords. It's about it. And I thought, wow, you know, he should take lessons because he's just got the couple of chords. But, he, you know, believe it or not, with 2 chords in Italian, you can play a bunch of folk songs.
Sure.
Like literally
all
2
you
chords.
Need, 2 chords.
And that's not even, I'm not even exaggerating.
And rock and roll came along and added the third one, and the rest
that's right.
Is
imagine
history. The Italians invented
the
rock
songs
and roll,
that
is what
he could have
saying.
Had at his disposal with that third chord. But I thought to myself, he should take lessons. Mm-hmm. I was taking lessons. Mm-hmm. I was getting better. And it looked like he was enjoying it. So I said, why don't you take lessons? And his response was, and it wasn't jokingly either, at least my perception as a kid was that he wasn't joking. It was, no, I'm too old for that.
Hmm.
And when I think back, he was in his mid-40s when he said that.
Which, some people start playing guitar when they're in their 40s. I mean, they're not going to be professional musicians, probably, but it's not unheard of.
It's not unheard of.
Especially if your child is taking lessons, then maybe you go together and take lessons and learn how to play guitar.
That's right. It happens. But I guess, you know, part of that experience for me was kind of, you know, I didn't think of him as old.
Exactly.
Right? I didn't think of him as old. I didn't want to think of him as old either. You don't want to think your parents are getting older, which means they're closer to death, right? So that kind of stuck with me, that feeling that, geez, he looks young to me, but he feels old. And, you know, now we're doing this show and I'm thinking, well, he was in his 40s.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are certain professions where you are considered old if you're in any kind of athletic activity.
Or a model.
Besides darts as yourself.
Am I in darts? No, I'm going to watch my son do some curling tomorrow.
Okay, curling. I guess curling, you could, you know, it's...
You could be older.
Still considered a sport,
I think you still need to be in good shape to do that stuff.
Relatively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've never really tried it, so I don't have any
anyway,
idea.
But in most sports where there's a lot of physical activity, let's say, when you're in your 40s, that's about it for you in terms of being a professional.
Right.
Let's say.
Right.
Of course, most of us aren't in professional sports, so 40 really isn't old.
But your dad was a professional footballer, and so he was feeling past his prime.
In his dreams, yes, he was.
I know you're a soccer fan. So, well, as I'm coming into this new, I don't know, is it a new stage? Whatever, we'll talk about that when we get into the research more. But as I'm coming into that midlife transition, I do find myself thinking about medical stuff and wondering about, oh boy, am I going to be having these aches and pains when I'm Dr. Spisano's age that stress me out, or am I going to be going to the doctors all the time?
I've been listening.
My son keeps playing this song, this old song from when I was a kid by The Pursuit of Happiness called I'm an Adult Now.
Right.
He's just, there's parts that he really likes. Sometimes my head hurts and sometimes my stomach hurts. And so I guess he can understand the words, so he likes parts of that song. But
yeah,
it gets me thinking, what, sometimes my head hurts and sometimes my stomach hurts. And I guess it won't be long before I'm sitting in a room with people whose necks and backs are aching.
Yep.
Et cetera, et cetera.
You know, the interesting thing is, I mean, there's psychosocial stages that Eric Erickson talked about many, many years back. A psychoanalyst that studied with Freud, or I guess was a disciple and then broke off from Freud in some ways.
The history lesson begins. No,
yes,
segue.
Yes, it does. No segue whatsoever on
you
this
snuck
one.
Snuck it past me that time.
Almost. You had to call attention to it.
I did.
In some ways, like there's one particular stage that he has that's relevant to our show today.
And this was the early 60s that he was publishing about this stuff, right?
That's right. So Freud had like five stages, from what I recall, and there were psychosexual stages that he had, and it was just, I think it was only up to, I don't know, age 5 or something, or age 10.
Unless you got stuck in one of those stages.
That's right. I don't know if he put actual ages to it, but it was like real, he just focused on the really, really young, right?
Right.
And Eric Erickson came along and he sort of blew that apart and started thinking, well, personality develops after you know, the youngest years of life. And so he made it right through to old age.
And he kind of removed it from like the sexual stuff that Freud was concentrating on. Right.
So he called it psychosocial stages, whereas Freud was calling it psychosexual stages.
And Erickson talked about developmental challenges that would occur at each stage. And you could get stuck at a particular stage if you didn't meet that challenge.
Look at Dr. Brian going into history. You know what it is? It's age.
Is that what it is?
It's age.
It's now I've experienced history. And so
that's right. You have a little history.
I am a part of history. So
loving the history at 40. That's what happens.
I'll tell you what. It's because I'm trying to reclaim my youth in my intro psych courses.
So here it is.
When I first studied Eric Erickson.
I'm 48 years old. If we would have started the show when I was 38, then maybe I wouldn't have had much history in the show.
Do you see?
So anyway,
tell me more about the Erickson.
Anyway, the point, I guess the point is, if two of us are doing history, you know it's going to be a long show.
That's true. I better shut up.
The point of it is that he had eight stages. The seventh stage later in life, he didn't put exact ages on it either, but it was like generally considered to be 40 to 60 years of age is what the show was about, really. And that's round about where he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And he called the stage generativity versus stagnation. So these were your options, you know, that you could
be productive.
You could be productive, but with a view to the future generations, like you're helping life progress in future generations, i.e. usually for most people, by being more selfless, raising your kids. Like you know, you give a lot to your kids. Mm-hmm. You don't expect the same back.
Right.
Right. That's very much a more selfless part of your life.
That generativity is sort of starting to think about your legacy and what are you going to leave behind later on.
Right. It's in a way, I suppose, I mean, in a deeper psychological way that you're unconscious of, a way of being alive beyond your years. Let's say if you're raising your children in a way that you're proud of and so on, and they go on beyond you one day, hopefully. Right.
So not because you want a kidney or something like that when you're a little bit older.
I didn't say that.
Oh, that's why you had a second child.
Generativity, especially nowadays, because not everybody mm-hmm. has children, mm-hmm. Could be you contribute to society in other ways. Maybe you're an artist, or maybe you do social work, or you know, you help out the needy and that kind of thing. It's selfless activities, in other words, though, for that stage, versus stagnation, where it is a reflective time in your life where you look back and you realize what you did and didn't accomplish and so on. So that part of it came from that,
right,
early on. I don't think it was crystallized though until 1965. When a man by the name of Elliot, or a psychoanalyst by the name of Elliot Jacques.
You say psychoanalyst, and this was in the 60s, the early to mid-60s, when we were doing our search, when we were looking for research to talk about this midlife crisis. That's still where everybody's talking about the midlife crisis. It's only almost exclusively in the psychoanalytic journals and quite a few French psychoanalytic journals, actually, from France.
Right.
That are still talking about it. So a lot of the recent research on this topic comes from modern, I guess you could call them, psychoanalysts.
Yeah, they're still
seems particularly in Europe.
Yeah, and like I said, so this particular guy, though, Elliot Jacques, crystallized it by giving it this term, this midlife crisis term, and started to really focus on that one thing, whereas Erickson was talking about all these eight stages.
Right.
And he was actually Canadian psychoanalyst.
Wow, we had those.
We did. Only the one, mind you.
That's right.
At University of Toronto, he studied, but of course, then from there he went on to. I think he studied medicine for a while. I'm not sure. He went to John Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
and from there he went to Harvard. And so that, I guess, most of it was developed while he was at Harvard,
right?
But the idea that there was this crisis. It wasn't just a stage. It was a crisis, midlife crisis.
Right, because Erickson didn't call it a crisis. He was just talking about the developmental challenges that you face at every stage. But Jacques felt like, no, there's something more to this stage of the game.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, because we've talked about identity, it's kind of an identity thing too, right?
Are you going to stress me out here and cause a crisis?
You're going to have a crisis before you're 40. If I'm not careful.
Oh.
You might as well let's just wait till you're 40. That's the only nice thing to do for you.
Okay. So I have a couple
more
weeks
left. And that's it.
To be calm.
Then it's crisis time for you. But no, so he looked at it more as a crisis, and if you think about what we were talking about in previous episodes about identity, we talk about when you're a toddler, you're 2 or 3 years old, the terrible twos, right?
Right. What that's the kids would call the terrible 30s.
That's
referring
right.
To their parents.
That's right. So that's when the kids are developing their identity. It's an important part of them asserting themselves and developing their identity. Then when you get into teen years, again, it's an identity crisis in the teen years, let's say. That's one of the terms used, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's identity development that's very important in those years.
That's right.
And this would be some researchers saw this, and even some continue to see this, as the third stage of this identity crisis or development, and it happens in your 40s.
Right.
To 40 to 60, let's say.
Now, that adolescent crisis, the I can't remember who it was, but I remember in the course, my course on child development, studying a chapter that talked about adolescence being a time of storm and stress. But the research didn't really bear that out. So mm-hmm. we were psychoanalysts at the time were considering that, and even people thinking about identity development were considering adolescence to be a crisis. But the research doesn't show that it's necessarily so. Well, at the adolescent level.
Right. Now, the whole thing about it is the word crisis, right? Now, there is
some... Do tell, please.
Well, because if you think about it, is there self-reflection in the teen years? Absolutely, because your mind has developed that capacity in your early teens. That's just cognitive development. You're able to reflect on yourself much more than you would have been able to earlier in life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the idea that between 40 and 60... you're going to be evaluating your life on, like, there's four big things you could be evaluating your life on during this period, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Your relationship to your significant other.
Right.
Marriage, perhaps, or common law, whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm.
Then your career.
Mm-hmm.
Your educational achievement.
Okay.
Okay. And whether or not you had children. Those are your big four.
The big four.
Right? And by the time you get to 40 to 60, you can have a pretty good idea of how you made out on those big four issues.
And on top of that, there can be other kinds of transitions happening at the same time, like kids leaving the house and going to university and things like that. And that's a big time of change that might potentially trigger a midlife, whatever that thing is called. The midlife situation that shall
crisis.
Not be named.
Let's leave a crisis for now, and then we'll see what the research says. But so there's triggers that are more likely to happen in these years. The children might be leaving. Your parents might pass away.
Mm-hmm.
You might when you're reviewing your life decide that, well, you know, now that the kids are gone, what is my relationship with my significant other like? Do I like it? Do I want to be in it?
And these things can trigger potentially major changes in your life, whether it's changes in the balance between your work life and your home life or changes in your relationships.
Right. For sure. And they can. And, you know, you think about it like there's also menopause, andropause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is it? Andropause?
I think they call it andropause, yeah.
Sounds like
it's a little more controversial, the andropause part, I think.
Yeah, but. Especially because it sounds like a former Russian premier. It makes more sense to me like that. Anyway, that, you know, it's a theoretical concept, isn't it? Is it real? It's supposed to be real.
I feel like I'm avoiding reading about that, so
yeah.
I don't want to know until the time comes. Then it'll be a surprise when we do our episode on andropause.
That's right. So
you'll already have gone through it by then.
Well, I can tell you it doesn't happen by 48.
Okay, good. Whew.
Yeah.
Got a few more years left.
Now, and there can be extramarital affairs as well, but you know, you can also look back on your employment history and your career. Are you happy with it? You're not happy with it? On your educational attainment, same thing. Like by the time you get into your 40s, a lot of these milestones that are set up by the culture, right, mm-hmm. for you to judge yourself by, and you didn't set them up yourself, it's a cultural thing. You judge yourself by these, whether you like it or not, and some people judge themselves more harshly and some not so much, but the myth is out there. Like the idea that these are four important things that people should accomplish in life, whether you like to believe that or not, that story is out there in the culture.
And right? People definitely talk about the idea of that becoming a crisis. And the question now is, does the research bear that out? And there's some, like I said, it's so hard to find something recent that's not heavily based on the psychoanalytic literature that's, you know, a lot of the recent studies were like case studies. So it was examining one person who maybe was going through a crisis. It's not questioning whether or not the crisis exists. it's saying, okay, this exists. Let's follow some guy who's having a hard time in his 40s, between the ages of 40 and 60. I found a study a while back in the Journal of Divorce from, back in 1985. And they just looked at people who were in a divorce support group. And the researchers' names were Arnold and Patrick. Number one, they surveyed 75 people. And only 28 of those people sent their questionnaires back. So right away you say to yourself, well, okay, what's going on? What's going on with these guys? Most of them said that they had experienced a midlife crisis. Well, 57%. Now, these were people in a divorce support group. Does that necessarily mean that the crisis was related to getting older and thinking about their mortality and that challenge of generativity versus stagnation? No, not necessarily. But on that questionnaire, they asked, did the crisis contribute to your divorce? And most of the subjects said, no, it was the spouse's crisis that led to the divorce. It's not my fault. It's the spouse was going through a crisis, and that's why our marriage broke up.
Right. You know, a lot of the research I was looking at, that there might have been a crisis between 40 and 60. There might have been a crisis between 35 and 40. There might have been one between 25 and 35. There was nothing in particular about those years that for the majority of people would stick out as, well, this is when the crisis will happen in these particular years.
Exactly. Now, part of that is because now those stages of life that Erickson talked about in the 60s are changing, right? People are waiting until later in life to have kids. You know, I'm turning 40 and my kids aren't anywhere near being ready to leave the house yet.
I mean, your 10-year-old still has a soother.
Now, wait a second. Wait, let's not get crazy here. He's going to listen to this and say, Dr. Spazzano, I'll get you for that. We'll play it at his wedding or something. But those stages are, some people are choosing not to have kids. People are entering employment later in life because of that long education time. It wasn't the same in the 60s, right? You could go in and get your BA or your Bachelor of Science and then go out and become a teacher. But now you need more years to do those kinds of professions. And so those things are changing, and that might have an impact on the time of that crisis, right?
That might have an impact. I saw a study from 2009, the most recent thing I could find that's related to this. They looked at the different stages of Erickson's psychosocial stages to see if following a group of people, what do they have here? About 136 and 182 people. So a little bigger than the one you were citing, but still not a huge sample. But what they did was they tried to figure out by following these people, this was a 34-year sequential study, the researchers' names, Whitborn. Mm-hmm. University of Massachusetts.
Now, sequential, not longitudinal.
Yes, that's right. So what they found was that it was the eight stages weren't like these compartments, like this happens at this age, this happens at that age, exactly like eight drawers, you know? Mm-hmm. It was more that some earlier stages, the kind of conflicts you would have at earlier stages might show up later in life. Some of those later conflicts might show up earlier in life, and you might revisit. Like you might have thought you solved an earlier stage and a task that you had to have in that earlier stage is the development as Erickson sees it. But it's something that you would have to return to later in a more complex way. So it's not
step by step.
It's not step by step. Nope. And it's not super clear that it's just between 40 and 60 that this will happen.
Mm-hmm. And that study didn't specifically look at whether a crisis happens. It was just looking generally at those stages. I found a study in the journal called Motivation and Emotion from 10 years ago. Well, 11 years ago now, I guess, from 2000.
Yeah.
So we have to say 11 years ago by a guy named Wethington. And he was citing previous research saying that only about 10% of people really experience a crisis.
That's right.
And when you look specifically at whether that crisis was related to getting older and the physical changes and thinking about your mortality, no, that wasn't necessarily the case. People seem to be, and this guy interviewed about 700 people, over 700 people, and found that lots of them reported crises in their lives, major events that had happened in their lives. Most of the time, those didn't happen between the ages of, they looked at between the ages of 38 and 50 as
right.
being this is when something should happen if there's going to be a midlife crisis. But they still, 10% of them still define themselves, even without that event happening in that period, as having had a midlife crisis. And so what Wethington thought was that this concept, the idea of this crisis, has become a way for people who, as they're getting older, to kind of organize their experience as they get up into the middle age and say to themselves, okay, well, that was my crisis and I got through it. And they just think of it that way because that's the way the media primarily portrays it, right?
That's right. I mean, it's a very popular concept, and surveys show that most people are aware of this concept.
Well, if
and assume that
if a six-year-old is asking about
there
it,
there you go, and they assume that when they're in those ages of, you know, 38 to 50 or 40 to 60, whatever you want to say, that they will have one, and that's a typical thing that will happen. Except that it doesn't necessarily happen.
No, and we're talking in 1 in 10 people, maybe it
that's
happens.
That's right. 90% of the time, it won't happen. And even the 10%, it's a little iffy kind of concept.
I think reasons why it gets blown up like that is that, well, you've got a baby boomer generation, right, that was coming of age a few years back now. And I think still we're seeing the impact of that. And there's a lot of journalists and other kinds of authors talk about this idea of the American culture of fear, that the media is paying lots of attention to this midlife transition because there's so many people
who have gone through it
or are going through it. And advertisers want people to buy their stuff to make you happy or make you feel better. I mean, you look at the Viagra ads. It's ridiculous.
There's a lot of
Viagra out there.
You're
seeing those on TV, and you don't even know what it's about, except that you know what Viagra is, but you wouldn't know from looking at the commercial what it is.
No. I would say this, though, and this is why we were talking earlier about that word crisis. It's not... Yes, the idea of a midlife crisis is probably a myth. At least that's what the research is telling us. It's not an actuality. It's a myth. It's a cultural myth.
Right.
It's a powerful cultural myth because people think they're going to go through it and then they don't. And you know, so that it's pretty powerful,
North American thing.
And it's a very North American thing as well. Although I found a study in Japan that talks about it as well. But Western, we should say. Western, okay. And Japan has a lot of Western influences, right?
Sure.
But, you know, we can say that the midlife crisis is a myth. Midlife reflection is not a myth.
So there's still something that you go through when you hit that point. Are you going to talk to us about what, so that I can benefit from your wisdom as my elder?
No, that's what the research is saying, that there is reflection during those years. Doesn't mean it's a crisis. In fact, you might reflect back and it's not a crisis. You go, wow, I did pretty good.
That was awesome.
I'm looking over my life up to this point and I like what I see. So it could be, the reflection doesn't have to be a negative thing either.
Well, the hope is that there's also still things to look forward to. I mean, looking back and saying, oh, I hit my peak when I was 25 years old and everything's been downhill ever since and it's only going to go more downhill from here, it would be hard to keep your motivation up to generate anything, if we're talking about generativity
yeah.
versus stagnation.
Well, like I say, there are those four main things that you can reflect back on your life about. And by the time you get into your mid-40s, 50s, and I guess even 60s, a lot of those things you can say, well, have I accomplished these things? How much time do I have left to accomplish these things? You know, if you're going to have kids, right? Chances are, doesn't mean you can't, but chances are you're not going to have them in your 50s, right?
Probably not.
You might have them
might
into your early
in the
40s.
Might change in
might
the future.
Might change in the future.
When people are listening to this podcast on a chip embedded inside their head.
That's right. And we all live to 200. Here's the thing. That's the other thing about it. You know, it's about lifespan too. So yes, in the Western world, we live till, what is it, 82 and 84, men and women, right? Something like that, our life expectancy now. in this is just like it's been going up a lot. In the 1800s, people did not live until they're 80 and 90 years old, and even in the West.
That's right. Yep.
And even today, there are many parts of the world where they don't get past 40. Like the average life expectancy doesn't go beyond 40 very much. So this is very much a Western sort of thing, and myth. And
so we're definitely talking about a time of reflection, and maybe there's going to be some transitions happening. If you're lucky enough to retire early, perhaps that might be one thing. Maybe you're thinking about, I mean, I did career counseling, you did career counseling, and working with people who are thinking about changing their career path at about this age that we're talking about, between 40 and 60, just deciding this isn't what I want to do for the rest of my life. I wanted to change things up a little bit. There are things that are happening at that age range, your parents passing away, the kids growing up, all of that stuff. You may be reflecting on your past accomplishments and what's left to achieve. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a crisis, but I mean, I would say if you are going through some stress related to that, if you are experiencing that as a crisis, if you're one of those 10% of people who do, I would think that what you would do is go get help the same as you would in response to any other kind of a crisis.
At any other time in your life.
Exactly.
Right. So again, I guess what we want to say is there's no evidence of a midlife crisis. There's some evidence of midlife reflection. Doesn't mean your life ends. You're reflecting back on your life. The crisis can happen at any age, right? It's not more profound or more intense during this middle age. And you can that reflection could be something that is upsetting, or it could be something that you're happy about. And there are things that are more likely to happen in terms of loss during this period, like the kids, like between 40 and 60, chances are by the time you're 60, I think probably your kids are going to be out of the house.
Probably.
Okay. Let's
hope so.
So there's that empty nest.
Yeah.
Your parents, by the time you're 60, well, they could still be alive, but there's a chance that, you know, mm-hmm.
Or their health status is going to change over time,
right.
For sure. Even if mine doesn't, the health of my parents could change.
Right. So that, I mean, there are things that are difficult to go through,
yeah.
that are losses, right? And those mm-hmm. losses can trigger some reflection. Doesn't make it a crisis in and of itself for that age. It might just so happen to fall between the ages of 40 and 60, but you could lose a parent earlier, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There can be divorces earlier. You can have losses for a lot of different reasons. You could lose your job before 40.
You can lose. Sure, lots of people experience that in the last few
years.
Well, you
can lose it after 60 as well.
Yep.
Right?
No doubt.
So there are losses right through life. Some of them tend to maybe accumulate more in this area. If you think about... when people get married, right?
Right.
Between probably 25 and 40, most people, let's not everybody,
these days,
obviously,
yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It was between younger 20, before, but yeah.
It was younger before. So between 20 and 40 even, mm-hmm. right? So when are most people going to be getting divorced?
In their 50s, maybe.
Right. If it's going to happen,
it's
likely to happen a little later. Right? You're not going to get divorced before you get married.
Not even possible to do
that. Not even possible.
No. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness for that. Although, you know, it's an idea.
Really? You're going to start that racket now.
We can start that up.
Ooh, we could start a business. Pre-divorce.
Divorce before marriage.
You know, you can have a prenup. You could have a pre-divorce.
Well, you can sign it right into the prenup that we are officially divorced. We'll think about marriage someday, though.
Maybe. Maybe so. That's a reverse engagement. A disengagement, perhaps. You could call that. I guess we could get to top three things.
Let's do it.
Well, I think the number one thing that I'm very relieved to report tonight is don't panic. This is not necessarily, it's a time of transition, this midlife idea, turning 40 and being in your 40s and 50s even, but it's not necessarily a crisis. It doesn't have to happen that way for everybody. So I can relax.
Yeah, so we should call it midlife reflection and reevaluation, not necessarily
sure.
crisis, right? Number two thing to remember is crises can happen at any age. The loss that is implied in a crisis can happen at any age. It's not any more profound or pronounced in midlife.
The third thing is, this doesn't have to be a time where all you're doing is thinking about the negative parts of your life, your regrets about things that you haven't done yet. It could be a reflection on positive things that you've accomplished or things that you still hope to accomplish in the remaining years. If it does wind up being generating some negative feelings or being something that you're not feeling happy about, or it becomes that crisis that happens sometimes for maybe 1 in 10 people, go get help just like you would for any other kind of difficulty you're having.
That's exactly right, and that is the end of our show. You can visit us at familyanatomy.com on our website, or you can email us at info@familyanatomy.com.
You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. And as usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune by Brother Love, and he's over at brotherloverocks.com. See you in 2 weeks.
And thanks for listening. A family thing. Hey! You know what to do.
FamilyAnatomy.com